Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. It's everyone's favorite nonsensical podcast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm very excited to bring you this episode. I really, truly am. But before I talk about it, I'm going to tell you right now, I know you're hearing a little bit of an echo. You're probably going, wow, John sounds really awful on this episode of the PVD Cast. Well, that's because I am still in my particular studio, so to speak, here at Casa de la Orlando, and doing a little remodeling. That's right, the comic book room is being kind of transitioned into an office, and so literally the only thing that's left in this room is a lamp, a quick card table, and my laptop and all my equipment here. Everything else has moved out into the garage as my girlfriend and I are rearranging things and renovating, if you will, this room. So, sorry, that's why I sound a little bit echoey. I apologize for that. Hopefully, that won't distract you from the awesomeness of this podcast. And why am I saying it's awesome? Because, quite frankly, you all know that I love hockey. It's my favorite sport, and we are about 4 days away from the start of the NHL season. It starts October 7th. And my guest that's going to be on this episode is a writer from Kelowna, British Columbia. That's right, way out on the West Coast. Mr. Larry Fisher is going to join me. We're going to talk all about the upcoming NHL season. He covers the NHL for not only the newspaper, the Daily Courier in Kelowna, BC, but he also covers it for a great website, thehockeywriters.com. And so the other night, he and I sat down via Skype. We talked all about the things that are going on for the upcoming season, how it's going to be an exciting season, it's going to be an interesting season. So certainly, if you're a hockey fan, you're going to love this episode, number 78 of the PVD Cast. So with that being said, I am going to jump right into our conversation here. But before I do that, I just want to let you know about a couple of quick things. And one of the things I want to let you know about is, of course, Bluehost.com. Bluehost.com is the official web hosting service for PVDcast.com. That's right, ladies and gents. I can't tell you enough about how much I love this company. They help put the PVDcast out there on the way, out there in the airwaves, ladies and gents. And they help me do that by having some great customer service, by having some competitive rates, and by just overall being a great web hosting service. If it wasn't for Bluehost.com, I wouldn't have my website, pvdcast.com, and I wouldn't be able to be out here talking to you, talking to Larry Fisher, talking to all the people that have been on the PVD Cast, and hopefully entertaining you every time you listen to an episode. So if you have questions, if you need to create a website for whatever reason, all you got to do is go over to Bluehost.com and get all the details, and those folks over there will be happy to set you up with the website you need and probably deserve. All right, with that being said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw it to a very quick break. So you're going to hear this musical interlude, and on the other side of that musical interlude is my conversation where we're talking hockey, man, with Mr. Larry Fisher. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. Of course, this is John Orlando here, and I'm sitting down with Mr. Larry Fisher, and he is a reporter for the Daily Courier in Kelowna, British Columbia. Larry, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for coming on, and I got to be honest, it's what, is it 5 o'clock your time out there on the Pacific Coast?
Yeah, we just turned just passing 5.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So you are the longest distance individual that's ever come on this podcast. So you have an honor there. You are the long distance guest so far. You win.
Right on.
All right, but let's talk a little bit more about your accolades, if you will. You've been covering the WHL's Kelowna Rockets since 2008 for that newspaper that I mentioned, the Daily Courier. And you are also a at-large writer for thehockeywriters.com. So I guess my question is, let's start off with how'd you get interested in hockey?
I grew up playing. I'm from the prairies up here, actually from Saskatchewan, small town, and started when I was about 6-7 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I was a goaltender.
Oh, okay.
And I played all along I played rep hockey, and then I played some junior. I played junior B and a little bit of tried some tryout camps at junior A, and then went to college and came out and played senior men's. And I still play in the beer leagues a bit. So my interest was basically from playing, and then grew up on a farm, on a grain farm in a family oil business, and decided that that wasn't for me. I didn't want to be a farmer. So I figured, what can I do? If I'm not good enough to play hockey, maybe I can get paid to watch it somehow. So I was thinking of jobs. Basically, I got into writing and into journalism in order to get back into hockey or stay in hockey. And so, yeah, hockey's my main passion. I cover all sports at the newspaper, but hockey's the thing I look forward to the most.
I gotcha. And if I'm not mistaken, the WHL season has started, correct?
Correct, yeah. We just started this past weekend, and actually the Kelowna Rockets are the defending league champions. So they had a banner raising on Friday night, and they're 2-1. They won their first two games and lost their third, and they're going on an Alberta road trip now, so I won't see them for a week.
Okay, okay. Who are they going to look? Who's going to be the toughest competition for them out there? Because I know that Calgary parental every year. Let me try it that way. I got tongue tied there. Every year, Calgary's pretty good with the Hitmen. You know, Kamloops as well. I know is a tough junior team out there. So who's going to give the Rockets a little bit of a run for their money this year?
Well, last year from start to finish, they were on a collision course with the Brandon Wheat Kings, actually, out east. And Brandon's returning even more players than Kelowna's returning. So Kelowna swept Brandon in the final four straight games last year to win the league championship. But I'd say Brandon's probably, they were ranked number one in the entire Canadian Hockey League to start this season, and Kelowna's ranked number four. There's some Ontario and Quebec teams at 2 and 3. But so Brandon's kind of the team to beat, even though Kelowna really is the defending champions. So they're out in the Eastern Conference, and then I think the Eastern Conference is stronger than the West this year for the WHL. So like I said, Calgary is going to be strong. The Hitmen are one of the teams to watch out there. Red Deer is hosting the Memorial Cup, the Canadian National Championship. So the Red Deer Rebels will be loading up. They'll be looking to bring in some ringers to obviously help their playoff hopes. And then Medicine Hat looking strong in that same Central Division in the Eastern Conference. And then out west, you got the American teams are looking pretty tough, too. Seattle Thunderbirds, they're looking to take a step forward. They got some top-end talents like Matthew Barzal, assuming he's coming back from the Islanders, and a first-round pick this year. And they got Ryan Groff was a second-rounder to the Calgary Flames, and a few other guys that are kind of just coming into that 18-19-year-old year, but they're going to be a strong team. Portland Winterhawks have always been strong, but I think Portland's maybe taken a bit of a step back, so it'll be interesting to see. I think there'll be some teams challenging Kelowna, but Kelowna's probably the favorite to come out of the Western Conference. And they've won 50 games out of 72, three straight years, so they're looking to make it four in a row, and it looks pretty promising.
All right. Who is someone that maybe hockey fans should look for coming out of juniors, whether it's in the WHA or maybe out in Quebec or where not, or what, wherever? Who are some of those players that maybe we should keep an eye on for the next couple of years? Is there anybody that rings a bell?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys. I mean, you look, even Connor McDavid, the first overall pick this year, was in the OHL last year. Every year, the Canadian Hockey League probably gets between 10 and 15 first-round picks every year. So even you look at Ryan Johansson in Columbus there, he was a big deal out here. He was the main reason the Portland Winterhawks were as strong as they were for quite a few years. Him and Nino Niederreiter and mm-hmm. Sven Barchi and obviously Oliver Bjorkstrand. There's our leading goal scorer from this past season. He had 63 goals in only 51 games. He was the first player in, I think, 12 years or something to put up those kind of ridiculous numbers. But Oliver Bjorkstrand, a Columbus Blue Jackets prospect, was arguably, I think he won league MVP this past year for the WHL. So there's a lot of top-end talent. You got some guys like Bjorkstrand and Barchi, guys that are the import players, the Europeans that come over and play. But there's a lot of Canadian-born players in all three leagues, right, from the Western League to Ontario to Quebec, and they're all they produce a lot of talent. If you watch the World Juniors, you'll see most the Team Canada and a lot of the American team as well have guys that play Major Junior.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about one man that you mentioned, Connor McDavid, because just a couple of days ago you authored and posted an article on HockeyWriters.com entitled "Oilers Trying to Pawn Off Nikita Nikitin." So how do you think the Oilers are going to do this year?
I'm high on them. I grew up about 4 hours from Edmonton, so my family was devoted Oilers fans or hardcore Oilers fans growing up. So I follow that team closer than anybody else. And I probably drink the Kool-Aid as much as, even though I'm an unbiased reporter now, I'm no longer a fan of the team, but I drink the Kool-Aid still a little bit. My buddies here are mostly Vancouver Canucks fans being in BC, and they give me the gears about being too high on the Oilers. But I think the whole organization from top to bottom has had an overhaul this year with Bob Nicholson being named president, Peter Chiarelli coming in as the general manager, Todd McClellan now as the head coach. So many player turnover. And then obviously the biggest impact will be probably Connor McDavid, the first overall pick in this year's draft. A lot of people, I mean, Steven Stamkos came out and said this summer that Connor McDavid's better than him as of today, because they asked Stamkos, is he better than you were coming out of junior? And he said, well, he's better than me right now. So that's saying a lot, because most people would consider Stamkos a top five, top 10 talent in the league. So I think Connor McDavid is one of those generational players, whether you want to call him Sidney Crosby 2.0 or whatever. I think he could come in, and if he can stay healthy and handle the rigors of obviously bigger, stronger men, I think he's going to get the Oilers a good push towards the playoffs. But they got, based on last year's standings, they have 35-point spread to make up to get into the playoffs. So you can say that's an extra, whatever it is, 17, 18 wins extra they need. That's a lot to make up in one season. So I think they might fall a little bit short, but they're definitely trending upward.
And you know what? I totally agree with you on that, because I think that in the West, I think Edmonton is one of the teams that has improved a great deal. You know, you mentioned not only drafting Connor McDavid, but Cam Talbot, picking him up as the number one goaltender, I think is by far one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle that the Oilers had to have, because I don't think their goaltending has been very good, has not been very consistent over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. Goaltending's been a struggle there. You know, they had Nikolai Habibula and they had Dwayne Rolfe and they had some proven guys, but in the last, they've missed the playoffs 9 straight years, and a big reason for that over those years has been shortcomings in goal. But you look, they were building around Devan Dubnyk, right? That was going to be their guy. He was a first-round pick for Edmonton, and they sort of cast him aside, and he had a rough year there and didn't pan out in Edmonton. And now look at him. You know, he's a Vezina finalist in Minnesota. So you look at Cam Talbot coming in, he reminds me in a lot of ways of what they thought they had in Devan Dubnyk. So I guess the thing is, they need a better defensive structure and a better defensive playing style in front of him to give him that opportunity to turn into that kind of player. And I agree. I think Cam Talbot's a real good prospect. Even though he's in his mid to late 20s coming in, I think he's at that point in his career where he could become an upper echelon starting goaltender. But he's only played, what, 100 games. He was, you know, undrafted guy. He doesn't have this huge pedigree, and he's playing behind a very good defensive structure with the New York Rangers. Arguably one of the best defenses in the league, that group. So he's coming to Edmonton where he's going to face a lot higher quality shots or you know, more odd man rushes, more stuff like that. So he's going to be challenged in Edmonton, but so far they've seemed pretty happy with him in training camp and in the preseason. So he'll be a key to that team. If he comes in and plays the way people think he's capable of, he should get them a lot closer to the playoffs. If it doesn't pan out and he has a start to the year, sort of like Devan Dubnyk did a couple of years ago, it could be a lot of question marks coming out of Edmonton again surrounding their goaltending.
And one of the things you mentioned in your article, and I just briefly mentioned it, was that defense that has some question marks behind it, because Andre Sekera was signed by Edmonton, but after the first, we'll say the top four defensemen, it gets a little bit shaky when it gets to spots 5 and 6. And Nikita Nikitin, of course, former Jacket, has not impressed too many people out in Edmonton, correct?
Yeah, he was a disaster, to be honest, last year. You know, he came in out of shape, and they called him out on it, which is pretty rare for the general manager or the coach to call out a player. You know, usually it's dealt with behind closed doors. But he was signed in the offseason and was given a two-year contract, $9 million, so $4.5 million per year, which he was a healthy scratch for the end of his tenure in Columbus. And all of a sudden, he's making, you know, $4.5 million a year. So the expectations were high, and you show up out of shape after you get a contract like that. You know, you're a professional athlete. Your job's to, at the very least, be in shape. He came in out of shape. They called him out on it. He didn't fit in all year long. Obviously, Dallas Eakins' defensive system maybe wasn't great, and he had some nagging injuries throughout the year as well. He was pretty banged up, but I think he was a big-time disappointment last year, and they're really hoping he can bounce back and to at least be a top six, if not a top four guy. But I think, like you said, I think they're top four with Sekera and Mark Fane kind of pairing as, I guess they're going to be a top pair, but on most teams, you know, you look at that and Sekera Fane is a second, maybe even a borderline second pairing on most teams. And Edmonton's kind of got them cast as a top pairing. But you look long-term, they got Darnell Nurse and Griffin Reinhardt are two top 10 picks, big, strong young men that are probably going to project more towards that top pairing. And then they just signed Oscar Klefbom for 7 years. He took a huge step forward last year. They're looking at him to possibly be a, you know, a solid number three, if not a number two guy. And then Justin Schultz has a ton of offensive potential, but hasn't really figured out the complete game yet. He struggles in his own end. He's put on muscle this summer, which was huge for him because I think he just got pushed around. There's a lot of big boys in the Western Conference, but you know, the Jeff Carters and Anze Kopitars in LA and the Ryan Getzlaffs and Ryan Kesslers in Anaheim. And he was playing head to head with those guys and he just wasn't winning those battles in his own end. But I think, the top four in the future, they would like to have Schultz and Klefbom be one of the pairs and then Nurse and Reinhardt be another pair. And then all of a sudden you got Mark Fain and Andre Sequeira playing third pairing minutes. And that's a pretty strong defense if everything pans out that way. But I don't know where Nikita fits into that picture long term, that's for sure.
Well, right now Edmonton did finish the preseason, or excuse me, are currently in the preseason at what, 5-0? They're undefeated, correct?
Yeah, they're going to start up here in an hour or so against the Arizona Coyotes. So we'll see how they do there. Obviously, Arizona's a team that's kind of trending downward and struggling, but we'll see how that pans out from tonight. But yeah, there's been a lot of optimism about this preseason record, but obviously the first week of the preseason, most teams are playing their, you know, their AHL guys or their young prospects. They're not facing real NHL teams or even, you know, the veterans that are in the lineup are kind of going at half speed right now. Nobody, you know, they're working off the rust, the offseason turkey or whatever it is. And then first week of the preseason, it's not a high intensity for the guys. You know, the guys that were on the team last year don't necessarily have a whole lot to prove. But now this week, these next three preseason games, teams are going to be icing pretty close to their regular season lineup, and things are going to be the intensity picks up. So we'll see how they fare against Arizona tonight. And then they have a home and home with Vancouver to end off the preseason before they head out and open up on the road in St. Louis next Thursday.
Well, speaking of St. Louis, I think that one of the coaches that is under a lot of pressure is Ken Hitchcock. Both these last couple of years, first-round exits from the playoffs, do you agree that he's probably the coach with the most pressure on him?
Him or Claude Julien in Boston, it's one of those two for sure. They're both kind of in the same boat, teams that have underachieved last season. And we'll start with Ken Hitchcock in St. Louis.
Sure.
That's a good place to go. But obviously, I think Ken Hitchcock's situation, his contract was up after last year, there was a delay in the summer before they announced he was coming back. And anytime that happens, you have to wonder how short that leash is on him. Because it wasn't like the season was over and they said, okay, you know, Hitch is our guy and we'll see you in the fall, see you at training camp, you know, have a good summer. It was, we're going to take a long, hard look at this coaching staff and see if this is the group to get us to that next level. Because I'm sure Doug Armstrong believes he's got the talent now, the prospects, the core guys. Obviously, Vladimir Tarasenko with the huge breakout year. They got, you know, Alex Pietrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester, Kevin Shattenkirk on defense. They like Jake Allen in goal, even though some people would say Jake Allen, Brian Elliott, there's still a bit of a question mark there. They ran into a tough team in the playoffs as well, so you have to look at that kind of objectively. And if they had played somebody else in the first round or second round, maybe they could have made a bit more noise. But they have been underachieving in the playoffs, and I think St. Louis is a team that could go either way this year. They could be hungry and come out and win the President's Trophy, or they could be Boston last year and bomb out and miss the playoffs.
And, you know, you mentioned Claude Julien in Boston. Zdeno Chara is out with an injury right now. They traded away Dougie Hamilton to Calgary. So what's going on in Boston?
Yeah, that team, I don't know. I don't like that team on paper going into the season. I mean, Don Sweeney seems fairly happy, thinks they can have a bounce back year, but I'm not seeing it. I think they're going to be, you know, trending down, especially there's a lot of teams going up in the East as well, Columbus being one of them. So I think from the outside looking in, I see Boston, you know, down in that 12 to 16 range, not really a true playoff contender. And like you mentioned, their defense is, they're going to have to hope that guys like Matt Irwin and Joe Morrow and who else is there? They got
Torrey Krug, who played quite a bit of minutes.
These young guys are going to have to really step up because Chara is not getting any younger. He missed a lot of time with a knee injury last year. He's hurt now. Dennis Seidenberg just had back surgery.
Oh, yes.
Out for the first 2 months. Like I said, Dougie Hamilton, arguably their franchise player, which they're good at trading away franchise guys, you know, Tyler Seguin and now Dougie Hamilton, the two guys that they got in return for Phil Kessel and could have built around those two guys, they're both gone now, and they didn't get a whole lot to show for it for the Dougie Hamilton trade, at least nothing that's going to help them this year. So, and then they decided to pass up on Cody Franzen, you know, they were sort of the front runner. Everybody thought they were signing Franzen, and they sort of, I don't know what happened there, but it fell through and he ended up in Buffalo. And I'm sure they would like to have Cody Franzen on that depth chart right about now, especially with Seidenberg and Chara hurting.
Well, you mentioned another gentleman that made some moves. That would be, of course, Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh. And one of those gentlemen you mentioned, Phil Kessel, how do you think he's going to fit in Pittsburgh? Because he's looked awful impressive in the preseason so far.
Yeah, they were joking. He scored two goals in his first game there. They were both deflection-type goals. And they said he only scored one goal all last season if you go back and look through a deflection-type goal off the rush like that. So he's been working out in the summer. They said that the Gary Roberts camp up in Toronto, which is where a lot of the top pros go and where the guys go to get in better physical shape and work on that side of the game. That's something it was always a knock on him, was his conditioning and his endurance and just his physique. So it seems like he's improved that side of things, and he's hungry. And, you know, Toronto's such a media hub. Everybody was – the spotlight was always on him, and people grinded on him pretty hard. I think he wants to come out and have a huge year playing with Crosby or Malkin, you know, or both of them on the power play. That's going to be a ridiculous amount of talent they have there. And I think Phil Kessel's out to sort of prove to Toronto that they gave up on him a little earlier, that, you know, it seemed like Toronto really wanted to get rid of him. They thought he wasn't good in the dressing room, wasn't good in the community. He was sort of being pushed out of there, that he wouldn't fit. He wasn't a Mike Babcock type player, you know, a hard worker, a guy that can play that two-way game and be responsible defensively. So I think he wants to prove them wrong. And I think, knowing Mike Johnston from Portland, Pittsburgh's head coach, he likes that run and gun game. He's going to play a system to Phil Kessel's strengths as opposed to maybe holding him back a bit in Toronto. I think he's going to come out, and he's a guy that could score 40 goals this season with one of those two superstar centers.
Yes, and I think one of the big question marks for Pittsburgh is staying healthy, because I think they have an amazing lineup. They went out and got Bonino, and they have Eric Fair as well, though he is sidelined right now. But they've really loaded up, and from my perspective, I think it's a kind of a win-now situation, I think, is what the front office is trying to say. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think you're bang on there, and I think front office is trying to say that. You know, there's potential for the team to be sold. You know, Mario Lemieux sort of putting the team up possibly for sale, so he's got some pressure. He'd like to see a winning season, obviously, because that would help the potential sale. And I think guys like Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, you know, they've won once together, but that they have the players there that could be a franchise, you know, a dynasty type team. That this team, you know, you got Marc-Andre Fleury in net, you got Chris Letang on defense, you got Crosby, Malkin, you know, you got some star power up front. This is a team that should be doing in the East what Chicago's been doing in the West and LA. You know, this should be a perennial Eastern Conference final Stanley Cup contender, and they haven't been. They've fallen short, and I think you're right. Part of that was a lack of depth beyond those top two guys, and now they've sort of brought in some veteran depth for the bottom six forwards, and the defense is going to be young and interesting. That's one thing to watch, especially if Chris Letang does get hurt, because like you said, they have a large injury history, right, from Crosby to Letang. Everybody, there's a lot of question marks about that Pittsburgh team, but I think you're right. I think they're all in this year. They're going to load up and they're going to go for it, because I think Crosby wants to win another cup. I think, you know, Malkin and Crosby want to stay together. If they don't win this year, there's going to be a lot of questions. Do they need to trade Evgeny Malkin? I mean, they're not going to trade Sidney Crosby, but do they need to move Malkin and bring in two or three pieces to help this team if they don't win together in this year or next year at the absolute latest? So there's a lot of pressure there to win, and I think it's coming from the top down, from ownership, from the players themselves wanting to win. And Jim Rutherford, too, he's a veteran GM towards the end of his career. He'd love to cap it off with a Stanley Cup.
Well, who else in the East impresses you? Since we're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins and we're talking about Claude Julien and the Bruins, who else in the East? What other teams in the preseason have impressed you so far?
The two teams I look at are Tampa Bay, obviously. They're, you know, they didn't really lose anybody from going to the final. They had such a young core. They gained so much experience from being through the playoffs that deep. They're going to come out hungry. You know, that triplets line was real good in the playoffs. Steven Stamkos is in a contract year. For whatever reason, he hasn't signed a contract yet, but he's going to light it up one way or another this year. I'm pretty sure of that. It looks like Jonathan Drouin, who was kind of in and out of the lineup throughout the playoffs, didn't play a big role, but he's ever since the start of training camp, they've got him next to Steven Stamkos, and he's been looking a lot more confident and getting some points. So I think you're going to see Jonathan Drouin take a big step forward. Obviously, Victor Hedman's turned into almost a Conn Smythe winner in the playoffs. He's a force on the back end. Top to bottom, I like that roster on paper. I think Tampa Bay is going to be – I think they'll probably top the Eastern Conference standings. I think Anaheim might win the President's Trophy, but I'm predicting Tampa to be the number one seed in the East this year. And then going down, I think Washington is another team that, you know, they brought in TJ Oshie. They brought in Justin Williams. They shook things up a little bit there. They got a lot of talent, and I think much like we were talking about Pittsburgh needing to win one, at least they've won one. You know, Alex Ovechkin's never won a cup, and he turned 30 years old here just a week or so ago, and you know, they say you're in your prime till 32-33, but he'd love to win one this year. And Barry Trotz is a coach that can really push the right buttons, it seemed last year. You know, Braden Holtby looked great in the playoffs all season long. Braden Holtby was great, but he really stepped up in the playoffs. He had the best numbers of any goalie in the playoffs. And I think that team's really primed to take that next step as well. So I look at one of those two teams getting past the Rangers and Montreal and some of those other teams that are regular contenders. I think you'll see Tampa Bay and Washington rise towards the top.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk real quickly, going back out to the West for a moment. You mentioned Anaheim. You think Anaheim, with not making too many trades or not too many signings over the summer, you think they're still top contender in the West?
Yeah, I think they are. I look at that roster and I see, they brought in a couple guys, Carl Hagelin from the Rangers, who I think is going to be a good fit there. They signed Chris Stewart, who kind of an enigma, but he's a big power forward guy, and they need somebody to play with Kessler and Sippelberg, but they still need that right winger, that right fit to play with Getzlaff and Perry on the top line too, whether it's Patrick Maroon or whether it's a guy like Chris Stewart or Carl Hagelin. You know, they added some depth there. Even guys like Sean Horkoff that they brought in, guys that have, you know, had some winning experience in the playoffs and veteran leaders, guys that have worn a C on their jersey in other cities. I look at that roster and I think, you know, as long as Frederick Anderson's for real, as long as their goaltending's for real, I think that defense is so young but so good. You know, top to bottom, that's a really, really impressive defense corps. I think Kevin Bieksa from Vancouver brings a bit more veteran leadership there, although I wouldn't say he's an upgrade on Francois Beauchemin. I think I'd rather have Beauchemin than Bieksa, but fairly even trade-off there. So I just look at that defense, though, with Fowler and Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm and Simone Dupree and, you know, up and down that list. That's a great young defense. They got a lot of firepower up front. I think, like we said, Jakob Silfverberg, he really emerged in the playoffs as a goal scorer, and I think that's going to carry over. So I see Anaheim as the team to beat in the West for sure, especially because most people think that Pacific Division, especially with Arizona being as bad as they're going to be, they still think that there's some easy wins there in that division. The Central Division, everybody says, is a lot harder, and it's probably true. The Central Division might be the hardest division in the league, counting the Eastern Conference as well. But I think Anaheim's going to be the class of the Pacific Division, and then that Central Division, flip a coin. You know, it's top to bottom good. St. Louis is in the mix. I think St. Louis might take a step back, but Chicago coming off a Stanley Cup win, they went through another roster purge. You know, they lost how many guys? Who knows what happens with Patrick Kane situations?
Right, which those are two things I was curious about. Do you think that the Kane controversy or the situation involving Patrick Kane is going to hurt Chicago more than losing some of those key guys like Johnny Oduya and Patrick Sharp, who both bolted and ended up down in Dallas? What do you think is going to hurt them more in their overall performance this year?
Yeah, I think the left wing, they lost their top three left wingers. They lost Brandon Saad to Columbus.
Oh, that's true, yes.
Lost Patrick Sharp to Dallas, and Chris Versteeg was a salary cap thing, but they sent him to Carolina. So that left side is vacant right now. You're looking at young guys like Marco Dano, the new guy from Russia, Artemi Panarin. Guys like that are going to have to step up and fill those holes. And are they capable? I look at Tuukka Teravainen. I think he's going to take a big step forward and be a breakout player this year, whether he plays center or wing. But I think a lot of it will depend on Patrick Kane, because that second line is all about Patrick Kane. You know, you got Hossa and Taves on the top line, and then they're hoping to have Kane with Anisimov. So, but the way it's playing out this case, I mean, you don't want to comment too much, but my understanding is that some of the latest developments have, and the way the league's handled it and the Blackhawks have handled it from day one, I think they truly believe Patrick Kane's innocent and he won't be suspended. He won't miss a game. it's going to eventually be thrown out. I think that's the way the league's sort of approaching it, by not keeping him out of training camp and stuff. So my impression is that he'll be there. He won't miss a game, and Chicago will again be a contender. And I think, you know, their defense got a little bit weaker losing Aduya, but you get Trevor Daly, and I don't know. I mean, Aduya might be a better two-way guy, but Daly brings a lot of offense from the back end. And I like the moves they made. I like Artem Anisimov. I like Marco Dano. I think those were good guys. I mean, you give up a great piece in Brandon Saad. That was a huge blockbuster deal, and the Blue Jackets should be really happy about the guy they got too. But I think Chicago made out all right in that deal. I think Chicago is going to be a threat throughout the season, and I think come playoffs, whether they're the eighth seed or the second seed, they're going to be a team nobody wants to play in the playoffs with this roster the way it is still.
Well, let's talk real quickly. I'm just going to go from, we're talking about the West right now, but I just want, something popped in my head. How do you think the NHL is handling some of these quote-unquote behavioral issues that some players are having? I mean, Slava Voynov's big situation in L.A., the Mike Richards situation up there at the border, Patrick Kane situation. Do you think the NHL is doing enough in handling these type of incidents the best that they can, or could they do more?
It's certainly been a rough off season for the NHL.
Yeah, most definitely.
Even Ryan O'Reilly signs a $54 million deal and then gets drunk and drives his truck into a side of a Tim Hortons the next weekend. So, you know, there's been some mistakes by the players, no doubt. I look at the situations of Voynov and Patrick Kane, and they're very different the way the NHL handled it. And I think that's because they knew right away that Voynov was charged. He was, you know, I think they, again, they're privy to a lot more information than we are as, yes, as fans or even reporters. We don't know really what happened in these cases. But Voynov was obviously suspended immediately for as long as the season went, pretty much. And it was I think they handled that one properly. And the Mike Richards thing, you know, did the LA Kings do the right thing by voiding his contract for a material breach? I don't know. You know, the NHLPA's challenged that, and it's been really quiet because it's going to play out in court. And I think his court case, our legal system up here is pretty slow. It creeps along, and I don't even think he goes to court till November or December or something. So that situation is going to kind of metal, and we don't know where it's going to go with Mike Richards. But I think in general the league's had a real tough off season, and they're going to have to, you know, get into the players' heads that, you know, you guys are professional athletes, you're role models for people all around the world, not only kids but adults as well. Everybody looks up to these guys, and they need to toe the line and be good role models and good citizens, and, you know, obey the rules that society set out, whether it's involving women or involving alcohol or whatever the case.
So, Larry, let's talk again. Let's just jump back into, we were talking about Western teams, because one of the teams I wanted to get a comment from you about is Calgary. Calgary Flames had a breakout year last year. They did very, very well through the regular season, made it into the playoffs. Do you think this is the year where they show everybody they're no fluke?
I think you're exactly. Calgary really overachieved last year, especially when you look at people that like the analytics and the advanced stats. Calgary was last year's Colorado. The year before, Colorado won their division and dominated, you know, won so many games. But yet, if you look at the underlying numbers, Colorado wasn't a good possession team. They weren't a good hockey team necessarily on paper. Last year, Calgary was that team. You know, they just kept winning, even though the numbers said they shouldn't be winning. But I think what Calgary did this offseason was they realized that, they acknowledged that, and said, you know what, we can't just return the same team and expect to make the playoffs again, because the numbers don't back that up. They went out and acquired Dougie Hamilton. That might have been the best trade all offseason, other than maybe Phil Kessel, but it was a huge blockbuster for Calgary, to already such a strong defense. I think Calgary's defense is one of the best in the league, in all honesty. I mean, you got Giordano and Brody, you got Russell and Weidman, now you got Dougie Hamilton, and whether it's Derek Engelin or Ladislav Schmid, but that's a really deep defense. And they got some young firepower up front. Obviously, I think Yuri Hudler probably overachieved a bit last year. I don't think he's going to put up those kind of, you know, 70 points again. But Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Sam Bennett, those young guys, they're probably going to take another step, or at least not take a step back. And you add Michael Frolik up front as a free agent. You know, yep. I look at that roster, and providing the goaltending's as good as it was last year, they have an interesting goalie situation, because Joni Orshio is he's no longer waiver exempt, so they got to keep him. He's a top prospect, so they got three goalies on the roster. So either Jonas Hiller or Kerry Rambo is going to be out of a job here come next week. It'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with their goaltending. But I like that team on paper, and I think I like them right around where they were, the 7-8 seed. I think they're going to get in the playoffs and maybe be second to Anaheim in that Pacific Division.
if you were the general manager, which goaltender would you get rid of? Would you get rid of Hiller because he's, what, 33 years old, 34 years old, and keep the other two?
Well, if they weren't going to get rid of Hiller, I don't know why they would have signed Kerry Rammo in the offseason. Right. He was an unrestricted free agent. It went a couple weeks, and then they said, you know what, we're going to bring Kerry Rammo back into the fold. You know, they didn't extend him before July 1st. They signed him after July 1st. There was talk they were in on Cam Talbot, which seemed weird. Why would they want Cam Talbot when they had Hiller and Rammo? But they went after, they were sort of kicking tires there too. So I think they knew their goaltending could be upgraded, even though it was a strength for them last year. I don't know if that was Bob Hartley's system, a good defense, what happened, but their goaltending was strong last year. There was no real complaints, but yet they seemed like they wanted to upgrade it throughout the offseason. Then they brought back Kerry Rammo, and that was sort of the set off alarm bell saying, okay, Jonas Hiller's out of a job, because if you're bringing back an unrestricted free agent that you could have just went with Hiller and Orscheo, why would you, you know, why would you pay Kerry Rammo more money to come back? So I think they like Rammo and Orscheo as their tandem, and I think they're shopping Jonas Hiller pretty hard right now, and I think they obviously would have liked to see Tampa bite on him when they lost Andre Vasilevsky, but Tampa ended up claiming Kevin Poulin from the Islanders, so Tampa's situation sort of settled. They might be looking at Boston. What's Boston? You know, they made a deal there with Dougie Hamilton. There's obviously communication back and forth. Is Boston happy with Jeremy Smith as the backup to Tuukka Rask? Are they happy with Jonas Gustafsson as a camp invite? He hasn't been signed yet on his tryout. Is he the guy there, or do they maybe have a little bit of money to bring in a guy like Jonas Hiller? And could the Flames retain some salary, right?
Yeah,
they'd probably be willing to either send a pick along with them or retain some salary to get rid of that logjam in goal. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Now, another team in the West that upgraded their goaltending was the San Jose Sharks, that managed to pick up Martin Jones from the LA Kings and losing Antti Niemi over to Dallas. Do you think that this is the year that San Jose makes some radical changes? Every year you hear Joe Thornton's gone, Marlowe might be gone. Is this the year that that happens?
I think the thing with those two is they have no movement clauses.
Right.
Their wives built brand new mansions pretty much next door to each other last year or the year before. You know, they got families. I think that's a family decision more than a hockey decision. Their families are set up there. They're raising their kids there. Their wives couldn't be happier there in California. They don't really want to go. And part of that, when you sign a no movement clause, it's the player's right to stay. If he doesn't want to go, you can't force him to go. So
true.
Guys, you know, I think they're playing at a fairly high level yet. They're not totally washed up. So I don't think there's a whole lot of pressure to move them. The team, I think Doug Wilson put calls out on them every year and probably approached them with, hey, what do you think about this place? And they've shut them down pretty hard time and again. So I think, could there be changes, wholesale changes there? I mean, I think the coaching staff changing was a big thing. Todd McClellan out, Peter DeBoer in. That'll shake things up a bit. I think it'll depend how this season goes, right? If San Jose's 10 games above 500 at the end of November, then probably everything's happy-go-lucky there. But if it's the opposite, if they're outside the playoffs looking in, then, you know, maybe those players will start to think, okay, do we need to change the scenery? Are we not happy here anymore? And because if you're mad at, you know, if you're not in a good situation at the rink, that carries home to your home life as well, right? Because that's your job.
Yep.
And if you're miserable going to the rink every day and the fans are booing you and the media is getting in your face, maybe you don't want to be there. Maybe you then convince the wives it's time to pack up and move. But right now the wives are happy there. The kids are happy there. And I think both Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau are happy being San Jose Sharks. So I don't think they're going anywhere unless the team really tanks this year. But I think San Jose's, they're going to be in that playoff race. Do I think they're a guaranteed playoff team? I really don't. I think you mentioned the goaltending. I think that's going to be a big, I wouldn't say a question mark, but it's going to be something to really keep an eye on, because Martin Jones is kind of like Cam Talbot. He's a top prospect. He's got good numbers in the minor leagues, but is he ready to be a number one? And if he falters, Alex Stalock's the guy there. You know, maybe that's a team that looks at a guy like Jonas Hiller yet, or some of these other goalies, because, you know, is Alex Stalock, or what happens if Martin Jones gets hurt? Is Alex Stalock going to carry the load? So I think their goaltending is, as much as it, you know, maybe improved, some people look at it as improved, with Antti Niemi's kind of struggled, even though he had a cup ring, he didn't have great numbers there, and Martin Jones has put up better numbers than Antti Niemi the last couple of years, but in a small sample size behind an elite goalie like Jonathan Quick. So I think their goaltending is going to be a big determining factor in how the Sharks do, and also a determining factor in whether or not some of those big name guys end up elsewhere.
Well, speaking of a big name guy that might end up elsewhere, we're going to go back out to the East Coast real quick because I totally forgot about Eric Staal. He wants an upgrade in his contract with Carolina, and there's been a lot of talk that probably as the trade deadline rolls around, we don't see Eric Staal in Carolina anymore.
I think that's fair. I think if they can't get a deal done by the trade deadline, Ron Francis can't afford to. Carolina's not going to be a playoff team this year. I mean, I'll come out and say that. They're not going to be in the playoffs, so they're going to be towards the bottom three or four teams in the East. You can't afford to let an asset like that expire. You can't afford to surpass the trade deadline and keep negotiating and then have him, you know, pull the pin and go somewhere else. I think Eric Staal genuinely wants to be a Carolina Hurricane. I think his brother Jordan's there. Jordan's on a long-term contract that probably isn't getting moved anytime soon. I mean, I think his contract might be higher than his trade value at present too. So I think the brothers would like to stay together. But I think Ron Francis is trying to tell Eric Staal and his agent that bring down your salary demands and maybe your term demands as well. You know, let's do something like what Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau did in San Jose. Let's do a 3-year, $18 million or something. You know, you don't need 5-6 years. You can handle 3 years and you know, let's keep that number right around where it is at about $6 million. Even though the cap has went up since he signed his last contract, his play has went down slightly and his numbers haven't been as good the last few seasons. And I don't know if Eric Staal is worth more than $6 million a year. I think if he gets that free agency, the Toronto Maple Leafs or the Montreal Canadiens or some of these other teams that could use a number one center will probably pay him a handsome wage, probably more than $6 million, probably up in that $7-8 million range. But I think if he wants to be in Carolina, he's going to have to take even money or a bit of a pay cut.
All right. Well, let's talk here for a minute about some other topics that are happening here in the NHL. 3-on-3 overtime is going to be something that we're going to see in the regular season. What's your thoughts on 3-on-3 overtime?
Yeah, it's wild. It's a blast. I mean, it's end-to-end fire wagon hockey. It's very exciting. I've been watching quite a few of the preseason games. And up here in our junior league, not the WHL. Well, this year the WHL went to it as well, and we've seen it a couple times in the preseason. They kind of copy the NHL rules. But in years previous, the BC Hockey League, which is a junior A league, a step down from the major junior, those guys have been playing 3-on-3 overtime for 5-6 years, so I've seen quite a bit of it there, and it's the talent is has a chance to shine because you can't defend 3-on-3. There's no real, you know, there's no trap, there's no forechecking system. It's just, you know, let's see some odd man rushes and see who can put the puck in the net. Being a goalie, coming from a goalie perspective, from how I grew up playing goal, it's scary. You know, it's only a matter of time. You hope the puck goes the other way, because if it comes your way, it's a good chance it's in the back of the net. It's tough for goalies, but it's going to be real exciting for fans. As exciting, if not more exciting, than the shootout is.
Well, and then I think it also brings a wrinkle in terms of you talk about it being hard on goalies. I think it's going to be hard on coaches, because how do you make strategy for this 3-on-3? It's a very, very interesting dynamic coming out, you know, this year in the NHL. You agree?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why they're doing practice 3-on-3 in the preseason.
Yeah, right?
Even if you lose 4-0, oh, we're going to overtime. We're gonna we're gonna practice this, and that's for the coaches. It's for the players. It's for everybody. But like you said, even making line changes, stuff like that, you know, when do you change? Because you change, especially if you have the long change, you know, it's an automatic odd man rush if the guy is not coming off the bench full speed. So, or vice versa, it's an automatic breakaway if you can time that line change right to get a guy behind the D. And, you know, heaven forbid you miss the net on an odd man rush, because that hits the boards and it's back the other way, 2 or 3-on-1 or potential breakaway, right? So
yeah,
it's complete chaos and it's almost impossible to coach or defend. So it's let's see who's got the best goal scores and let them go have some fun.
All right, let's talk about expansion, because there has been a lot of talk about Quebec City and Las Vegas getting franchises. Bettman has come out and said it'd probably be 2 or 3 years before we see a franchise in either city. So what's your thoughts on the expansion process?
I think it's moving along fairly smoothly by all indications. I think they were actually I've been kind of disconnected today, but I know there was a bit of a press conference or a bit of a presentation from both those markets to the Board of Governors and to the Executive Committee today. I haven't heard much feedback on it yet, but I know it seems like everything's trending in the right direction. I think Vegas is going to be a slam dunk. I think Gary Bettman wants to be the first professional sports league to set up shop in Vegas and make some money in Vegas. And I think it's a good market. I think there's a ton of Canadian tourism as well. You go to the Vegas Strip and it's half Canadians, and Canadians love their hockey. So when they're down there, if there's a rink just right next to the casino or the bar, that's where they're going to be heading. So Or there'll be a casino in the rink, I'm guessing, so they can do it all in one place, a one-stop shop. So I think in general, though, it sounds like they got a good local fan base, too. They sold a ton of season tickets already. It sounds like Vegas is going to be a slam dunk, and I look at Quebec City kind of the opposite, or, you know, it's mm-hmm. still a question mark to me. I know a big interest in Quebec to bring the Nordiques back. They missed the Nordiques. They loved having them, and such a tough situation the way that ended with they move, and the very next year they win a cup in Colorado, right? And that's just a tough situation for those Quebec fans. So they desperately want that team back, and I get that, but can they afford to bring them back? That's the other thing. Our Canadian dollar's weak right now. You know, we're at 75 cents, 76 cents. So that's a huge, you know, last year at this time we were even money with the American dollar, and I think that's the biggest thing is the cost difference. And obviously the players are all paid in American dollars. So that's a big commitment from the ownership group. And they do have a strong ownership group with Quebecor, but they need the season ticket people, and they're going to need to charge more for these season tickets than they did back in the mid 90s. So those people that might not be making much more money are going to have to pay a lot more to go to the games. And so can they keep that fan base? The first year, it'll be just like Winnipeg. Everybody's going to be there. It's going to be awesome. Except they're getting an expansion team, and expansion teams are never very good out of the start, but there'll be the energy in the building if Quebec City gets the franchise. It'll be well supported for a couple of years, but I think Gary Bettman's worried about the long-term sustainability with the Canadian dollar, and Gary Bettman's asking a lot of money to get a team. $500 million expansion fee is huge. I think it was $80 million
in
2000 when Minnesota and Columbus got in. So you look at that, that's a huge jump, $500 million. Plus, there's a possibility that if the Montreal Canadiens want a territorial fee, because you're kind of stealing their fans, as much as, you know, people that love the Nordiques, and they were a huge rival of the Canadiens, maybe they didn't jump on the Canadiens bandwagon, but you're moving back into that province, and do the Montreal Canadiens want a territorial fee on top of the expansion fee to, you know, kind of take some of their TV rights and some of their corporate sponsorship and stuff that will be going to Quebec City? So do they owe Montreal any money on top of owing Gary Bettman $500 million and the other owners? So I think there's some logistics there for Quebec City yet, whereas I think Vegas is much more of a, like I said, a slam dunk there that makes a ton of sense. And I think a lot of people wanted to see Seattle.
Yes.
Las Vegas and Seattle, especially the way the divisions are as well. You know,
yes.
You want two teams in the West, then it's 16 and 16. It makes a lot of sense. So another situation you might want to keep an eye on is the Carolina Hurricanes could potentially be for sale as well. Or rumors are. So maybe Carolina moves to Quebec City and they get their team the way Atlanta moved to Winnipeg, and Seattle gets their stuff in order, and they end up getting the other expansion team, and away we go, because Carolina would be then staying in the East in Quebec City, and they'd have 16, and Vegas and Seattle would make 16 in the West, and we got 32 teams and everybody's happy. But we'll see how it plays out. It sure seems like it's trending towards both those cities, Vegas and Quebec City, are going to get franchises the way it's heading, at least in the public eye.
Well, one thing that I do have about expansion that does bother me a little bit is the Arizona situation. You know, that team has never turned a profit being out there in the desert. There's been a lot of problems with ownership and with the city itself that I just wonder why keep that franchise there.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe that's the team that then moves to Seattle.
Maybe.
You know? If Seattle can get their rink together, Seattle's got the fan support stuff. If they can just get that rink built and get that figured out on the lease and get the arena up and running, they're going to get a team there, I think. So maybe Arizona will shift up to Seattle. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I agree that the Coyotes have been a mess, and Gary Bettman doesn't want to let that die. That's his baby. You know, he's keeping it on life support and bringing in different owners and pulling all the strings he can to keep that team going. But at the same time, the team's terrible on the ice this year. You look at that roster, you know, they're trending down. Obviously, if they can draft Austin Matthews, that's got to be the goal going into the season. You know, they're going to say Shane Doan, Mike Smith, those guys want to make the playoffs. They're going to come out and say, you know, we think we can bounce back. But realistically, you know, as good as Oliver Ekman-Larsson is, and some of these kids are going to be Max Domi and Dylan Strome, they need another franchise guy there. And that Austin Matthews is born and raised in Arizona. He's, you know, he'd be the perfect fit to get that team back to the level that they used to be at and where they need to go. So I think this is a tank season for Arizona, and that's not going to help at the gate, because people aren't going to come. That rink's going to be twice as empty as it was last season by Christmas.
Yep. Yeah,
it's going to be hurting financially, and these owners apparently are, you know, maxed out on credit and stuff too. So how's that dynamic going to work? But I think Gary Bettman will keep them going and hope that draft lottery, hope that Edmonton or somebody else doesn't pull another fluke win in the draft lottery. Hope that Arizona finishes last and gets the pick and gets Austin Matthews. And that's kind of the only hope, is getting Austin Matthews in the desert and getting that interest back up, much like Jack Eichel's done for Buffalo. You know,
yeah.
There's a huge craze in Buffalo right now. People are pumped about Sabres hockey, and give Tim Murray credit. He's built the team around Jack Eichel overnight, kind of in the summer, and brought in a lot of good guys, Ryan O'Reilly, Cody Franson, Robin Lehner. You know, there's reason for optimism in Buffalo, and I think if Austin Matthews goes to Arizona, I think you'll see their management staff, Don Maloney. He's one of the better GMs. A lot of people have respect for Don Maloney. I think he can flip that franchise much the way Buffalo has this offseason and get them trending upward for the foreseeable future. And maybe there is a reason to save that team. But otherwise, I think they could be on the move.
All right, Larry. So let's start wrapping things up here. We're getting up to around the 50-minute mark here of our conversation. So any closing thoughts for the upcoming season for the NHL?
Well, I think with the 3-on-3 overtime and with Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel and some of these, you know, changes and new stars that are coming into the league, I think it might be one of the most exciting seasons we've had in a long time. And I look as well at the parity top to bottom. You know, obviously the salary caps close that gap, but besides maybe Arizona, who else doesn't have any hope of making the playoffs? Almost, you know, almost 29 teams have hope of making the playoffs. Do I think New Jersey, Carolina, Toronto are going to make it? Probably not, but stranger things have happened, right? And especially out in the West, too, you know, like you look top to bottom, which teams aren't going to make the playoffs? I mean, it's shaping up to be a really exciting season where any team can win any game. And that's what you want as a fan, as a reporter, as, you know, anything. You want that parity, and it's as good as it's strong as it's ever been from a parity standpoint.
I gotcha. Well, let's talk real quick where fans might be able to get a hold of you, or where listeners might get a hold of you. I know you have a Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Larry Fisher, all one word, capital L, capital F, and then it's _KDC, as in Kelowna Daily Courier. So that's my Twitter handle, and I'm fairly active on there. You can read me on the Hockey Writers, obviously, if you just go to the Hockey Writers and go through the authors to at large, or even if you just Google my name with the Hockey Writers, it'll take you right to the author page and track me on there if you want. And where else can you read me? You can obviously read me. There's links, I think, in my Twitter profile. You can track me down right there to my Kelowna Daily Courier articles as well. There's a paywall there. But if you want to follow the WHL and some of the prospects that are coming up, that's a good place to find me, because I cover the WHL quite regularly.
All right. With that being said, Larry, hey, thanks so much for coming on. It's been fun sitting here just talking some hockey with somebody that also loves the greatest sport on the planet, let's just say it. So thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. It was a blast, and look forward to the season to come.
All right, man. Well, with that, folks, I'm going to throw it to a very quick break, and on the other side of that break, I'm going to wrap up this episode, so stay tuned. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mr. Larry Fisher. If you're a puckhead like I am, I know that you enjoyed hearing the opinions and the insights that Larry had, that I shared. And, you know, I do want to say I totally feel like I didn't mention this in my opening, that, you know, Larry for 7 years has covered the WHL's Kelowna Rockets, a very popular franchise in the Canadian Major Junior system. And I kind of feel bad that I omitted that, but definitely check him out at thehockeywriters.com, where he has articles up quite frequently, and follow him on Twitter, definitely, LarryFisher_KDC. I'm looking forward to having him back on maybe in the springtime. We'll talk about the playoffs as they roll around, and we'll see if some of those things we talked about here on this episode indeed came true, if our predictions were correct. So, but again, thanks so very much for him taking some time out of his busy schedule. It was kind of unique to talk to somebody clear out on the West Coast. So, all right. With that being said, I think I do need to clue you in on something. I want to talk and switch gears, if you will, and talk a little bit about comic books. Are you looking for some cool comics to read? Then you should check out the catalogs of two great comic book publishers, Nix Comics and BackPorchComics.com. No matter the genre, whether it's kid-friendly, Western, science fiction, or whatnot, these two websites will have something for your liking. You've heard the men behind these sites on this very podcast, so you know what they're all about. So just head on over to either Nix Comics, NIXComics.com, or BackPorchComics.com, and pick up some new, refreshing, and interesting comics
and, you know, spread your wings a little bit, if you will. So, with that being said, without any further ado, let's get into Orlando Space! Yeah, you hear the music in the background, and I tried to keep it a little more mellow because I'm in this echoey room, if you will, and I don't think echoey is a proper adjective, but it is what it is. So, with that, let's talk about something that I think is cool, something that I think is awesome, something that you should check out if you're not already checking it out. And that is, for this episode, I want to talk about a show that I've always liked, I've always enjoyed, but it's currently in a transition period. And that is The Daily Show. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago, at the beginning of August, I believe, that Jon Stewart said goodbye after 16 years. And just the other day, Trevor Noah, the new host, took over the show. And I gotta say, that's my fave for this episode. I think Trevor Noah has done a fabulous job with The Daily Show. I think he could tighten up a little bit with the interviewing, you know, at the last third of the show where they have their special guests come on and he interviews them. But overall, man, I think the dude is doing an awesome job. Very big shoes to fill, folks. Let's just be honest with one another. But I think he's doing an admirable job, and I'm enjoying The Daily Show. So I'm glad it's back. New episodes, talking about the news and politics and all the stuff that goes on in the world and poking fun at it. I'm a big fan. So that's my fave for this episode, The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. With that, I think it's time for me to start wrapping things up. So let me tell you where you get in touch with me. If you want to shoot me an email, you can do so. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com. You can follow me on Twitter @pvdmvp. That's also where you can find me on Instagram, pvdmvp. Don't forget to listen to this particular podcast on Stitcher Radio. Just look for The PVDcast. And as always, you can listen to the episode on SoundCloud as well. And I'm happy to say my exile from iTunes may be over very, very soon. I'm happy to report that I think that I figured out what the issue is and have somebody working on it. Finally, I know. Only been doing this podcast, what, 3 flipping years? But anyways, hopefully that exile will end and I will be on iTunes soon too. So, that's exciting, isn't it? Anyways, exciting, and a lot of you are like, great, we won't hear you bitch and complain about it anymore either. Which is true, I'm guilty as charged on that one. So, but anyways, hey folks, it's been fun, but I'm going to get on out of here. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I will talk at each and every one of you later.